Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, I'm Mary Eileen Williams at Feisty Side of 50 Radio, and this show is a celebration of baby boomers who are embracing life as we grow older. And speaking of embracing life, everyone loves getting lost in a great book, especially one that both informs you and captivates you with a tale that is so riveting, it's guaranteed to keep you eagerly turning pages well into the night. Our guest today, James Boswick, has written just such a book. James is best known as one of the most respected medical malpractice and personal injury lawyers in the nation, but somehow he's found the time to produce a debut novel that will not only give you an insider's look into the life of a lawyer, but also a tale filled with intrigue, romance, and one man's heroic fight for justice. The book is called Acts of Omission, and James joins us today to share all about it. So welcome, James.
Hi, Mary Eileen. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, I have to begin. I had a little time to gush with you before we went on air, but oh my gosh, I have a huge congratulations, or there are a huge congratulations in store for coming out with this gem. It kept me on the edge of my seat, and there's all these surprises and twists and turns, but it also gives the reader a real insider's view into the legal profession, and that was a surprise to me, a lot of it. I know you've gotten a lot of praise from the general public, but also from your fellow lawyers, so you have to be excited about all of this.
Oh, I certainly am, because that was one of my basic goals in writing it. I wanted not only to write something that was fun and interesting and as a novel should be, but also I wanted to write something that was really authentic, something that talked about the legal process in a way that was interesting, but still taught people about what we do, and not in criminal law, but in civil law, you know, where so much of the trial work actually takes place. I wanted people to understand
that. Yeah,
that
is a point you brought out, I'm sorry, in the book, too, that, you know, there's a lot of books out there about criminal law, but this was a whole new vantage point for me and I'm sure the other readers. But I do want to start out by you giving us an overview of the story so our listeners will know a little bit more about what we're talking about.
Well, it's essentially based on a case I tried back in the 80s. Of course, it's a highly fictionalized version of what happened, but I used as the skeleton, the bones of my story, a trial I had when I was a young lawyer and didn't know any better, and I got immersed in this little family and this devastated young man. He was a quadriplegic, means he was paralyzed from the neck down, and I wanted to help them, and I wanted to help the family, but unfortunately it was medical malpractice that had gotten him in that situation. But unfortunately, what I was offered was a case against a lawyer who had managed to mess up the medical malpractice case, and unfortunately, the lawyer was probably the most famous lawyer in the country at the time. Very loved, local San Francisco icon. And so everybody told me I shouldn't sue him, but I wanted to do something for this family. I wanted to seek justice for them. So that's the underlying story. And that's the basis of the whole, sort of a David and Goliath kind of thing.
Well, and I don't want to give too much away, but David does pretty well. But David has his challenges. Oh, my gosh. There are some real twists and surprises in this story. And some of that may be the fictional aspect of it, but, boy, what a wonderful story to start out with and drawn from your own profession. That's got to be gratifying to be able to write about something so important to you personally.
It was. Because I wasn't the writer before I took on this project. I broke briefs as a lawyer, but of course you have to tell a story for the judge, or the judge isn't going to be interested. But I wasn't really a fiction writer, but what I I wanted to do was tell a story about civil law, and I wanted to make it something that was really authentic. So often in when you watch movies and when you see stuff on TV and when you read books about the law, I like legal thrillers, so I read them. When you do, it's so inauthentic. Most of the stuff we as lawyers look at and say, oh my gosh, that's not how it works in court. That's not how lawyers think. That's not how it works. And I wanted to write something that was not only fun, but actually would give people a window into the life of a civil trial lawyer and what kind of things make them tick. What motivates them? What sends them on a crusade like this, and why? And what they have to go through, and the choices they have to make, which can be very difficult. So that's what I found exciting, trying to lay that out for folks, and in a fun way.
Absolutely. And one of the things that really surprised me, and I want to get more about the book itself too, but I mean, just the hero, I will call him Matt, the lawyer, he was having money problems all the time. You think about, you know, lawyers, especially maybe malpractice attorneys or things like that, is just being loaded and, you know, highly successful all the time. But no, each trial or each thing you take on has to be a gamble because you're laying out a lot of money to start out with. That was one of the things that really surprised me.
That's what people don't really understand. They think of civil trial lawyers, really, because it's always been the stereotype is, quote, ambulance chasers or very wealthy. And in reality, there are some that are very wealthy and there are some ambulance chasers out there. But most, the great unwashed majority, are just hardworking folks that every time they take on a major case like this, have to come up with perhaps hundreds of thousands of dollars out of their own pocket. And it's all, they're entrepreneurs. They're doing it. They only get paid, they only get that money back if they win. If they don't, they might go into bankruptcy. There probably isn't any good civil trial lawyer that hasn't at one point or another bet the farm on a case that they probably think they maybe shouldn't have taken, but they just can't let it go. They get immersed, and they're crusaders. And that's sometimes, that's a good thing, but also it's sometimes a bad thing.
Well, I thought it was a really good thing, especially in this book. I was rooting for Matt for sure because, I mean, it really did. It brought a whole new insight, you know, into the life of a legal or a lawyer. So, but I'm thinking of you being your own, you know, having your own highly active and well-respected profession yourself. How the heck did you have the time to write a book, especially one that's as well-written as this? I mean, what was the creative process for you? Did you plan a certain day of write daily, or how did you fit all this in?
Well, yes. The only way it would work for me was I had to make it a habit, like working out. You know, I had to have, let's say, 3 hours a day that I had to devote to that. I had to make it. I couldn't do it during trial, which is a 24/7 process, and I couldn't. You know, once in a while, you have to take time off to make the habit work. But it has to be a habit. And I didn't work from an outline. I let it flow. The outline, of course, was the bones of the case that I had had tried and worked up and lived. But I got started on the process by my wife signing us up for a class on how to write a novel over the age of 40. And we had a new little baby at home that, and we'd put to bed at 7 o'clock at night, and I'd go up and write. And
wow.
I wrote about 2/3 of the book that way. And then our second daughter was born, and she wouldn't go to sleep, so I was into the writing for years. and then later I went back and finished it, and then of course I was at the point where I said, "Uh-oh, now what?" You know, I have no idea what to do with it now. I've got 500 pages of a manuscript, and don't know what to do with it.
So what did you do with it? You're leaving me hanging here.
Yeah. Well, what I did with it, is that I had had a client who was got very involved in the case. I was representing his child who was brain injured from birth, and he went with me to all the depositions to watch the process. He got very involved with it, enjoyed it, and we became friends. And he heard I wrote the book, and he happened to be a movie producer. He was in Hollywood, so he said he wanted to read it. So I gave it to him. 4 years later, I hadn't heard back from him, and I thought, oh, my God, he hated it. And, you must get hundreds of things to read. And then he called me one day, and he said, I finally read the damn book. I love it. He said, my favorite book and movie of all time was The Verdict with Paul Newman. And he said, This is better. I think we can make this better, but we got to get you published. So he helped me get an agent, and off it went. Of course, we got rejected by the first 10 publishers, so then I had to do the most difficult thing, which was to edit it down from about 550 pages to about 450 pages, which they call killing your baby. Because you think everything's perfect, of course, and it's not. And so you have to cut the fat out. You have to look at things that don't go anywhere. You have to make it tighter. You have to, and that, I think, is what really made it into something that the next publisher that saw it took it and published it. So that was good.
That is really good, James. And before we went on air, I mentioned, I mean, just the way that you write itself. Each sentence was so well crafted, and your descriptions are really beautiful. We're both from the San Francisco Bay Area, and the way you describe the fog and the weather and the scenery, I mean, it's quite remarkable. So when you killed those babies, it must have hurt a little bit, but boy, did you come out with a great end product.
Well, that was, I was lucky because it happened in San Francisco. It's about San Francisco. I've lived here for so many decades. It's my home. And so I was writing about something that's iconic to start with. And that actually makes it easier, because if you have to describe something, why not pick a gorgeous place like our San Francisco Bay Area? And that was fun. And it was fun trying to craft descriptions that would resonate with people. It was also fun. The writing process is fascinating because when you're writing, it starts, what's fascinating, it takes a life of its own. It really starts to develop. These characters start doing things you never thought they would do. And you think, well, where did that come from? They start to have a life, and you start thinking of them like they're real. And they say, no, wait a minute, they're in your head. They're not. You know, you can tell them what to do next. No, you can't. They're going to do what they want to do, and off they go. And that's when that happens, I think that's when a book comes to life, alive for the writer. But also, I think that eventually that makes it's the same with the reader. I think the reader feels that. I have that feeling.
Well, as a reader, I have to agree with you, and I have to say, I hope we get to find out more about what's going on with Matt and Adrian and all the rest of the people. So do you have anything down the line that might keep these wonderful characters alive for both you and for us?
Well, that's the plan. I mean, the plan is, and it's in process, and it's doing happily really, really well. I mean, we've sold out the first edition of the hardbound. This next week it's coming out with the paperback version, which is a beautiful, beautiful paperback. And it was just nominated for the Harper Lee Legal Fiction Award 2020. So it's really starting to happen. And with the movie contract that's we're working on, it's just, that's exciting. So kind of have to concentrate on some of that right now. But I have, the next one is in process, and it will be interesting what happens to some of these characters. And some of the characters that people really like will probably have a greater role in other books as well. And I'll bet you know who I mean. People that were characters that are pretty interesting that will develop. I think it will be fun.
Well, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they were all pretty doggone interesting, but that is so exciting. And the news about the movie, oh my gosh, whether, you know, it all works out or not, Ping, it must be hard for you to fall asleep at night. There's so many good things coming your way, James.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. At 77, I didn't think it would be like this. I thought I would still be doing what I also am doing, which is trying cases. And although in the middle of a pandemic, that's very difficult to do because we can't get a jury.
Yeah.
But to have this also, it makes you realize that you never know what life is going to hold, and just keep having fun and doing what you enjoy, and good things will happen.
Well, that sounds great, and they're certainly happening for you, James. So where can our listeners go to find out more about you? Because I know you also have a very active profession once the pandemic is over and you can get back to trial. But also, where can they get a copy of this amazing book, Acts of Omission?
Well, right now, unfortunately, the bookstores are mostly closed, though some of them are opening. I know that, you know, certainly in Book Passage, Book Inc. has them. Barnes & Noble, whenever it opens, has them. Certainly Sausalito Books by the Bay has them, and they're just all getting in the new paperbacks. The hardbounds are – there are a few still around in some of the bookstores if they've been closed and now opening. Amazon, of course, has it, and it's on Audible. Audible has about almost 400 reviews, mostly 5-star and 4-star, and so does and Amazon does as well. And you can so you can order it, of course, that way as well. Although I prefer people to go to their local bookstores, because the bookstores are, after all, one of the most wonderful places to go and shop. And I like to have the actual thing in my hands, you know. And I'm one of those kind of people. But
I think a lot of us out there are, because it's great to just hold a wonderful book in your hand, and then I like to, you know, turn down pages and underline and all these things. So I agree with you, James.
Yeah. It's a strange time we're in right now.
That's for sure, but this is one of the ways, really, getting a great book in your hands physically, or if you do go the other way, it doesn't matter. This is a great story, Acts of Omission. I know you're going to bring a lot of joy to a lot of people and help us get through this difficult time by kind of escaping into a fabulous story. So any final thoughts you have, what would you like your readers to take away from the book?
From the book? Well, I hope that they would just learn more about what lawyers really do and what makes them tick. It's a fun story, but also it tells a story about the people out there working to help other people. That's what we do. That's what motivates us. And in this time particularly, you know, we're in the middle of something that is extraordinary. We haven't ever had a thing like this. The courts are shut down. We can't have juries. Our lives are upended. But it's a time to think about what we can accomplish, because now is the time to look at what we can change. And I think our protests show us that this is the time where we can all pull together and we can make real change. Even more perhaps telling, because of everything that's going on, maybe even more telling than it was back in the 60s, when I remember we all had great hopes for real change. I think we pull together, we can do it. This country is capable of that. That's what I'd like to leave people thinking about.
Well, I agree with you, and we will end on those very high notes that you've just left us with. But I want to thank you, James, not only for your time and sharing your amazingly creative mind and story with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marilyn.
And for all you listeners out there, please check out Acts of Omission. Again, you may not be able to find it in your local bookstore now because they might not have their doors open. So turn to Amazon. If you can, get yourself a real book, but the Audible would be great too, as well as other ways to read this story. It really is an eye-opener as far as not only the legal profession, but just all the wonderful interesting twists and turns are going to keep you turning the pages, as I mentioned earlier, well into the night. So until next time, this is Mary Eileen Williams at Feisty Side of 50 Radio. Then I'll catch you later. Bye-bye.